Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT on FM News 101.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barbecue Nation here on KXL and the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT. And by now, you're probably on your third turkey sandwich or so, maybe your fourth piece of pie, and about your sixth hour on the couch in 2 days. Well, no need to get up. This is a special edition of Barbecue Nation. Today, we're going to revisit some of the interviews with guests from the last 5 months. Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet. Tuffy Stone, the world champion from the Jack Daniels. And world-renowned pitmaster and restaurant boss Aaron Franklin. We're going to go back and listen to some of their interviews. I'd also like to welcome Miss Kayleen, as always, on the show. So it's Barbecue Nation. It is low and slow. Let's get going. We're going to continue our conversation from last week with Graham Kerr, the Galloping Gourmet. And at the end of the show, we were talking about Graham's new book. It's called Flash of Silver, but it's obviously talking about the salmon and swimming upstream and that, how that correlates to life. What prompted you to write this, first of all, Graham?
Well, I think it was because I was at that point in my life when we're growing close to 80 years of age and beginning to, you know, the right hip wasn't doing that well, but I could still walk with the best of them and that sort of thing. And I was thinking about, what am I doing? You know, what's the point of this life of mine? I've done all of this work, 1,800 television shows and about 5,000 radio programs and 30 books and all the rest of it. But what does it add up to? And what am I to do with what time I have left? And I was out in a stream in the Skagit Valley here and also down in the Columbia River and the Mackenzie River. Looking at a salmon run and seeing a Chinook actually go up and throw itself at the Willamette Falls.
Uh-huh.
And it only does that for about 5 weeks in the year when the runoff is just right and the water temperature is just fine. It's not too much. It's not too little. And they can make it. It's about a 12-foot leap. And I watched it, and when I saw this salmon go over the top, I saw other salmon with their heads poked through the surf at the bottom watching it. And then I saw two or three salmon give it a go to do the same leap. There was a tree which was over the fish ladder over on the right side, so they couldn't go up the fish ladder at that time. They were forced into the situation. And then I saw to myself, my goodness, that's it. That salmon is not preaching to those salmon about climbing up. It's actually doing something, and it's observed to be doing something, and that then causes the other salmon to say, hey, he can do it. I can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think when we look at global warming and the gradual disintegration of everything which is beautiful around us, and with pollution and all kinds of thoughtlessness, it doesn't take much to imagine that if someone starts to do things by doing less harm, that other people they see that do less harm and do the same thing. And then we start a movement of people who are doing less harm. And I think we could stop the rapid decline about what's going on, leveling it off a little bit if that was to take place globally. So I'm, and I think last time we chatted with each other, I said to you, I want to try and do a small thing and do it well until it's done. I'm just a lonely old fish making it upstream. And I know that if I make it upstream, there's a chance for my, for the survival of my species, of the human species on this planet. And that's why I wrote it. I wanted to know, how did you get habits like you've got? How did you relinquish those habits, and why did you do that? And now, what is it that you were doing with your life that could be meaningful in some fashion?
I think that's so appropriate. I mean, you know, when we talk about growing, and it doesn't matter whether you're growing as a person, whether you're growing as a, you're growing a garden, whether you're growing your skills in the kitchen or on a grill or whatever. I think that's all in the part of growth, and the process. You know, we all, you know, the, what was the saying in the books? We're all, what was I trying to say here? We're all just visitors. We're
strangers and aliens en route to a better country.
Right. So it's one of those things where I think if we just take time, everything doesn't have to be up in arms and, you know, at loggerheads and huge arguments. I think if we just kind of stopped and looked around and said, you know, if we did just a little, like you're saying, if we did just a little bit less of that and maybe just a little bit more of that, things would work out a heck of a lot better.
I don't think, honestly, Jeff, that I'm going to change the world at all with this book. But it was very helpful to me to help to change my life.
Sure.
Just to go over and find, that's how I got that habit. That's how I pursued that habit and did really well, was very successful. And this is how I got around to relinquishing that habit. And this is how I get to feel better about my life as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
do you think that people can, whether it's in their eating or what have you, replace those habits, or do they just modify those practices?
I think that we don't do well when we preach to other people about how they should be living their lives. I think this is an internalized thing. We wake up one day and we decide, I'm doing too much of this or too much of that. And the really sensible person seems to do a little less of something, unless it's something obviously silly, like smoking, for example. I think that can be dealt with altogether. But otherwise, I think it's a good idea. For example, a piece of brilliantly long-smoked brisket.
Right? Yes.
That is just that marvelously succulent, tender, beautiful flavor thing. It's very hard not to be able to have a good old American slice of that at about 10 ounces on the plate. And to actually cut that down to have 4 ounces seems to be un-American activities. But I'm telling you, I think that if you savor that 4 ounces, and you've got great beans on the side with that and some great fresh cabbage or whatever it is that's on the side with that, and a good piece of bread. Oh, man, you know, that is a balanced, beautiful meal that isn't going to do harm.
One of the things that always struck me in your shows was at the end of the show, when you sat down to enjoy the meal, and you usually pulled somebody out of the audience, if I remember correctly, to enjoy the meal. And you would just get this look on your face like it is just nirvana. And it's, you know, it's just whether it was the steak Diane or whatever you were doing, you know, and it was just, and the person across from you was actually doing their version of the same thing, because they got into the moment and were just put everything aside, you know, most of them had probably never been on TV before. And I just enjoyed it. And I think, you know, that goes hand in hand with, if you're going to cut down on things, proportionate things, change the behavior, but you still have to have that passion and enjoyment.
It's Full Flavored Radio, Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
You can listen to the engine moaning out as one. Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation. We'd like to thank Peyton Hills Natural Beef for sponsoring the Quack Shack. Football season is over, and you guys are going to have to tell me what you thought of the Civil War game yesterday. But I can tell you this, I'm not sure about that outcome. Tuffy Stone was just crowned the world champion at the Jack Daniels in Tennessee last month. Tuffy is not only an excellent pit master, but he's also a TV host, a restaurant boss, and an owner, Tuffy is not only a pit master, he is also a TV host, a restaurant boss, and owner, and he's also an ex-Marine. I think you will hear why Tuffy is a world champion and so successful. Welcome back now to Tuffy Stone, who won the Jack, and, well, he's won more than that. I mean, if you go to his website, which is coolsmokebarbecue.com, and you look at everything that Tuffy's done just from 2012 forward, it's quite an impressive list. If you go all the way back to 2007, which takes 2 pages to print off, I can tell you that. He's done 157 contests, 38 grand championships, 21 reserve grand championships, 91 top fives, 124 top tens. I'd say that's pretty good. So anyway, we were talking with Tuffy before we went to break about getting prepared to go. And so I'm just going to let you pick it up right where you left off, Tuffy, if you want to, because that's really good stuff for our listeners out there.
Well, you know, Jeff, as I was saying, you know, so much I think that it takes to really cook the best barbecue, perfect barbecue, is being prepared, being organized, all the things that I said that I did for the Jack. Look, there was 90-some teams down there all dreaming of trying to be the 2015 27th annual Jack Daniels barbecue world champion, and there was a lot of focus down there. I had a lot of distractions going on. I was able to close the lid on 4 entries that I was pleased with. We have to turn in both dark meat and white meat for chicken at the Jack. Then you turn in ribs, pork, and brisket. I I'm not the guy that usually, if you come up to me and say, how was your food, Tuffy? I'll say, well, this was good, this wasn't. I'm not the guy that will usually say categorically, I was happy with all 4 of my meats. But on that particular day, Saturday in Lynchburg, Tennessee, my chicken was really, really good. I made adjustments on my chicken from the year before. I made some adjustments on the doneness from some observations from cooking at the Royal. It was pretty boxed. It all fit in there nicely. The sauce was set just right. The doneness was right. The flavor was good. The ribs were really, really delicious. I missed reserve grand champion at both the Invitational and the Open at the Royal by a half a point.
Oh my.
And both days my ribs were a little less tender than I think is perfect. So I said, I'm going to make sure my ribs are tender for the Jack. That box was good, probably walked it a little bit too soon. Had a gorgeous pork box and was really pleased with the brisket. And off we went to awards, and I had a lot of friends and all these people I was telling you about earlier that were with me And I'm just, I don't like the awards usually. I put so much into my cook, mental, emotional, physical, all those things. And then to have a big group of fans around you that are thinking, that's the best barbecue I've ever had. I'm always worried that we're going to disappoint. And so there's little pressure going into the awards.
Sure. Do you find that, before we started the show today, I was talking to Kayleen about this, and we were talking about the holidays coming up. Now, this doesn't have anything to do in particular with barbecue, but it has something to do with the mental aspect. Between the TV shows I'll do, the personal appearance commitments, and those type of things, let alone my own stuff at, say, Christmas or Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. I'd just as soon have a bowl of chicken gumbo soup by the time it's done than look at another, something to cook. I mean, I get that. Does that make sense to you? I mean, it does to me.
Yeah. I love cooking barbecue, but at the end of the day, my favorite meal is probably a nice grilled steak, a big Caesar salad, and a chewy red wine.
There you go. So let's get back to let's talk a little bit in particulars about how you prep your meat real quickly here. We've got about 3 minutes left or so in this segment. So when you're going to do the meat of choice out here, if you will, is a brisket. Okay. And everybody wants to know how to cook a brisket, and we talk about it ad infinitum, but one of the things that people, they do out here, but they don't do it as much as you guys do in the Eastern states and Southern states, is they don't work with pork as much as you guys do. So if I gave you a pork butt and said, Tuffy, what are you going to, tell me how you prepare this. You don't have to tell me your secret ingredients or anything.
Sure.
Just how you prep it.
Well, I think there's two ways to speak to it. One would be on the competition circuit and what does well there. But really, your listener, you got barbecuers from all over that would want to cook great barbecue in their backyard. So what I would say to somebody that wants to cook really delicious pulled pork or pork shoulder or pork butt in the backyard is, first of all, come up with a rub. Most rubs will have salt and sugar, paprika, cumin, onion powder, garlic powder, different types of peppers. Put a liberal amount of that rub on there. I let my rub sit on there for about 7 hours in a refrigerated state, and that allows that rub just to kind of sink in and dissolve a little bit and bring in some flavor penetration. If you want to do an injection, that's a great way to bring in some additional flavor deep inside that big cut of meat. And then, I'm cooking at 275
degrees. It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT on FM News 101.
Hey, welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network and your Thanksgiving weekend. Just wanted to remind you, for all of you that use pellet grills and smokers, you should consider, and I recommend highly, Bear Mountain Pellets from Bear Mountain Forest Products. They are locally owned and made with only the highest quality wood from around the U.S. Try Bear Mountain Forest Products and their Bear Mountain Pellets. You can also check their products out at smokehouseproducts.com. I use them myself. Okay, and if you want to email us, you can do barbecuenation@kxl.com or recipes@kxl.com. Aaron Franklin from Franklin's Barbecue in Austin, Texas, has made quite a name for himself in the world of barbecue. And Aaron is a very lively interview. Aaron's got a new book out, and I don't recommend these things too much, but I'm going to say this is one you should have. It's the Franklin Barbecue, a meat smoking manifesto. I love the word manifesto. It's like, it's there, you know, it's, you got to have this.
Yeah, there it is.
When we were talking in the last segment, we were talking about brisket, of course. Is there a right way and a wrong way to trim brisket, Aaron, for you?
There's a lot of ways. There's the way I like to do it, which I kind of, for me, on a personal level, think of it as the right way. But, you know, it really depends on what you want. I mean, back in the day, you know, traditionally brisket, you just, you know, like kind of like historically, well, I shouldn't say historically because, you know, before that we were doing whole animals. But, you know, as boxed meat came about in the, you know, mid-50s sure. and stuff, when people actually started only cooking brisket, you know, kind of the idea was that it was a cheap piece of meat. You cooked it, you know, as fast as you could, and I still agree with that, sort of. But, you know, you didn't really do anything to it. You didn't, maybe didn't salt and pepper it. You maybe didn't put anything on it. You just threw it on fire with no trimming and just kind of, you know, a real kind of East Texas-y way. And the way I grew up doing it is that you would take the back of a knife and just slide off all the fat. Like, what? Mm. That's the good part. Like, what are you doing? So then that gets us into trimming brisket a little bit. If you want, like, a better finished product, you kind of need to think about what you need to do to get there. I guess kind of, you know, think about what you want and then just kind of reverse engineer it to what do you need to do to get there.
Sure.
You know, so that lands us into trimming briskets. And, you know, if we're cooking 100 briskets at the restaurant, we don't want a bunch of them that are all different sizes. We don't do growth hormones or any of that kind of stuff. So sure. They vary in size greatly. Some are thick, some are thin. You know, they're completely different. Each animal is totally, totally different. So that's kind of a way for us to trim them all to about the same size. And if you're making sausage, great. You know, you have scraps for that. If not, then it's certainly pretty wasteful. But really, if you only want a quarter inch of fat in the finished product, you're probably going to have to trim some off. So that's kind of how we landed on that. And I kind of think that's the, I guess, my right way to do it.
Okay. Well, it sounds good. Excuse me. You talk in the book, and this is something that I had only heard once before, actually. You talk about the stall. And I found that very fascinating. I mean, to me, it was just one of the, I didn't even know what to call it, but I've known about it forever. But the stall, in dealing with the temperature and stuff in the meat, you want to enlighten our listeners on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got a huge, and it happens with, you know, a pot roast, or it happens with a huge ham, or anything large, pretty much, it might be noticeable. But pretty much as the muscle's cooking, it's tightening up. And eventually it starts to get really, really just kind of tightens up and it squeezes out a lot of moisture. And what's happening there, called the stall, is that, you know, it squeezes out moisture and it starts to sweat in theory. So, again, through evaporative cooling, it cools off and it kind of has a hard time regaining that. So if you're looking at the temperature curve on it, like a brisket may get up to about, you know, somewhere around the 160 range, you know, depending on what's going on and how fast it's going momentum-wise. You know, it'll kind of go, and then you might see it kind of back off, and it'll kind of cool off a little bit, and it'll kind of hover in that temperature range for a while. And then finally, after that, the muscles start to break down, start to reabsorb some moisture, and then it really starts to cook a lot faster at that point. But, you know, I mean, I know the first couple times I cooked a brisket and actually put a probe in there, I was like, oh, my God, what's going on? What's going on? How can it get cooler? This can't be. And then I started kind of thinking about it, and, of course it makes perfect sense.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
Well, I think people at home, if they've never heard that, they should look it up or get your book. I'm not here. I want to tell people about your book, but I'm not hawking your book for you. I want to make that clear. But I just think it's there's so much good information in this for people, and especially people that don't do this type of thing all the time. I mean, I cook outside year round and several times a week, so that's a good thing for me. But pretty fascinating stuff. Let's smoke ring is that's one of those things where I think people's own preferences come into play a little bit, at least in my theory. Is it some people like a larger smoke ring? I have friends who they like it that
there's very little non-pink meat showing, if you allow me that. You know, they like it really heavy, and other people like it very light. What do you do at Franklin's there?
I could care less about the smoke ring. You know, okay. Smoke ring does absolutely nothing for flavor. Taste, it just doesn't taste any different than normal meat. You know, and it is just a chemical reaction that happens between a real combustion. You could theoretically get one on a gas oven if you really wanted to.
Sure.
There are some ways to cheat that, but I think the smoke ring thing really comes up where people have maybe an overinflated value of a smoke ring, and I think that probably stems, I would guess, and I'm going out on a limb here, no, you know, tree puns intended, but, you know, for a presentation kind of thing, for a competition barbecue, you know, that's something that the competition stuff is kind of trained to look at, like, oh, it's got a great smoke ring, or it looks neat, but really, it doesn't mean anything. If you're cooking it the right way, you're going to have one, it's unavoidable. There's some ways to increase it and decrease it naturally. There's some really fake ways to get one, too, if you wanted to use chemicals and stuff, but really, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. If you're cooking over fire, you're probably going to have at least a small smoke ring. That's totally nothing we pay attention to at the restaurant.
Now, you cook your briskets and your, I don't know, if you cook your other meats in paper, too, or just your briskets?
Just the briskets.
Yeah. And is that just something that, because some people don't do that. I know the connoisseurs and the aficionados, you, Steve Reichlin, some of those people, they all, you know, want you to do it in paper. I've done it in paper. I like that, but a lot of folks at home maybe aren't comfortable with that. They think the stuff might burn up on them.
Well, if you're cooking hot enough to burn up that piece of paper, you probably can't eat the meat anyway.
That's true.
You know, that's kind of what I think about it, but yeah, I think paper's okay. I mean, I sure obviously don't have a problem with it. If I was going to cook just one brisket for home use, I would probably not wrap it at all. But at the restaurant, if we're cooking 100, you know, we don't want a bunch of naked briskets running around, so we're going to cover them up with something.
You
so
bet.
We can stack them up in the warmer for lunch and kind of control them a little bit better. We don't use foil. I think foil is just a little too steamy, a little too pot roasty for my taste, a little too soggy on the bark. So I think paper's kind of a happy medium.
There you go. Quick question here also. Do you think that people that use liquid smoke should be flogged?
Oh, boy. I better not answer that one. Might get myself in trouble.
Well, I'll answer it for you because that's what I think. I don't think, you know, not to insult anybody's product or anything, but...
No, I smell what you're stepping in for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
And it smells like liquid smoke.
Yeah, it does. It does. And it kind of tastes that way, too. Real quick, I did a... I judged one of the local barbecue contests here one time here in Portland. And very nice presentation by all the competitors, all that. There was like 8 or 10 of them. And when they brought up the sample from this one and they opened up they bring it up in a little styrofoam thing, you know, and they open it up and you could smell the liquid smoke. Nobody would even taste it, the other judges.
Wow.
And I wouldn't either because it was just so, it was so prominent and so rancid, but it's just like, no, take it out. It was just,
you know, I think there's a grandma somewhere that would certainly have my blessing if she was doing a weird brisket in an oven to use liquid smoke. But outside of that scenario, I don't know. It's just kind of weird. It's weird to put chemicals on something.
Oh, no, it is. It is. It is. We're going to take a break here. We'd like to thank Aaron Franklin from Franklin's Barbecue in Austin, Texas. We're going to continue this discussion next week on Barbecue Nation with Aaron. But coming up next, we've got Colton Hintig from GrillLight.com. Remember the guys with the flashlights and the spatulas and stuff? That's him. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
I nursed him till the danger passed. The days went by, he mended fast. And then from dawn till setting sun, he practiced with that deadly gun. And hour on hour, I watched in awe. No human being could match the draw of Ringo.
It's full-flavored radio. Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
Before we leave today, I'd like to tell you what's coming up on The Nation. We've got Graham Kerr's coming back to talk about his book, Bob Tallman, 8-time PRCA Rodeo Announcer of the Year, will be coming up with us. Our Christmas gift show here in a couple weeks. And then we're going to teach you all how to cook a prime rib for the holidays. So that's it for the nation this week. I'd like to thank Kayleen and my good friend Court Johnson. Don't forget to check us out on KXL.com at Barbecue Nation or my site, thecowboycook.com. Here we are back at the nation, the Barbecue Nation. And if you recognize that theme song, it was from Graham's show, The Galloping Gourmet. And we had to do a little digging to find that for you, but we did.
Thank you.
So I do have, there's one question I've wanted to ask you for years. You were one of the shows, and you said it more than once, but I've never forgotten it. You were doing something with a chicken, and you held up the back of the chicken, and there's that flap on a chicken that's already been cleaned and stuff there, and you were kind of being silly with it. You said, "This is the parson's snout." Do you remember that?
And the parson's nose.
Parson's
nose. In England, it is called the parson's nose, yes.
And I thought that was so funny.
Really?
Yeah.
In England, everybody knows that is parson's nose. Yes, and not meaning anything at all about the parson. But
no, yeah. You know. I just, you know, from the age of 12, and I'm in my late 50s, and I remember that. So, you know, I guess I've either got a good memory or you were quite charming, which you always are. But I just remember that. So.
The thing that most people shame me with is the day that I skinned an eel, and I had this hook from the ceiling of the studio, and I hung the eel and put the hook through its head and cut down just behind the head and loosened the skin, and then proceeded to pull skin off the eel at the same time as saying, you know, I feel like an over-enthusiastic rabbi.
Well, maybe the bris be with you or something. I don't know, but I must have missed that one. I must have missed that one, but that's...
I'm afraid people keep on reminding me of that one, I'm afraid. Yeah.
I will go find that on YouTube. It's got to be out there somewhere. It's that's the same way you do if you're going to clean a rattlesnake or something. So,
yeah,
exactly. The name of the book is Flash of Silver. Graham, it comes out November 4th. Is that right?
It does. And if you go on my website, it'll be on Amazon and in bookstores and all that sort of thing. But on my website, what I'm going to say to those people is I will take $1 off the Amazon price, so it'll be a little cheaper. But I will add a book, which I call The Gathering Place, which is a large, multicolored, hard-covered book, which I have. I'm going to throw that in for nothing as a little addition, and I'm going to autograph both of those books for people up until Christmas.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So do you still wear suspenders?
Yes, it's a great way to keep your pants up.
Yeah. You always had the classiest looking fun suspenders on the show.
I had 300 pairs of suspenders, I want you to know.
300?
Wow. Yeah. And it gave them all to various charities. They all raised money with my suspenders. So I've got one pair which came from Rouen, France, from a gardening shop, and it is a little Frenchman, you know, with a little sun hat on, farming his garden, and it's very nice pair. Yeah,
it's very good. Well, Graham Kerr, I can't tell you how much this has meant to me and my audience and Miss Beaujolais here for being able to spend a couple of hours actually with you and discussing the world and food in which we live. And it's truly been a pleasure. I will put the links to your site on our sites, both or all three of my sites actually, and do that. And so they can find out about your book deal there, and not just Flash of Silver, but your other books that you have. And I am so grateful that we finally got this opportunity.